Now on News Talk, as part of our spring season of documentary on News Talk, producer Ciarán Ryan explores the weird and wonderful world of Irish vintage motor enthusiasts in Turning Back the Wheels.
You know when people go to football matches and hurling matches and stuff, there's another cadre of people that go to shows like this, and they're on every Sunday all over the country, and you mightn't get them all because there could be two or three on the one Sunday, but you meet like-minded people and it's just a day out.
Around the country there are numerous people spending every spare hour engrossed in a pretty unique hobby: restoring, maintaining and operating vintage modes of transport. You might see them on old tractors, driving classic cars, or even cycling bicycles that are nearly a century old.
You know, every day you go out, the Sunday you go out, a gap in the field, you go in, you'll always meet somebody. Today now you see everyone looking here today, laid back, tipping along, meeting people, talking. That's what it's all about, getting different ideas, or someone looking for parts, or help each other out. That's what it's all about. It's a big family, and keep the thing going.
It's all about takeoff.
In a field in County Limerick, the Irish Vintage Engine and Tractor Association are holding their annual All-Ireland Rally.
Hi, my name is Joanne Martin. I'm the president of the IBTA. I'm here at the 2015 All-Ireland Rally here in Doon, County Limerick. There's a great crowd around here today. Everything is looking well. The rain is staying away for us, thanks be to God. And we have our chairperson here as well with us.
Yeah, I'm Jim Fogarty. I'm from Thurles there. I'm the chairman, national chairman of IVETA. Well, sure, we're, I suppose, the biggest vintage organisation in Ireland. We have around 4,600 members. Our chief aim is the preservation of all our heritage, all types of vintage and engines and anything that's to do with our heritage. We're into the preservation of it and look at preserving the past for the future. The organisation was formed back in 1970 with a group of people coming from the Great Dorset Steam Rally, and they were on a bus, took a bus over, and on their way back they talked over starting some kind of a vintage thing in Ireland, and they started up in 1970. I think it was originally founded in a hotel in Nina in Tipperary, and we've grown to what we have today, and our headquarters is in Dunamore in County Laois.
Well, my dad had a 20 tractor, and I suppose I was always stuck in the middle of it, and I was a tomboy, and we ended up then, you know, on a Sunday, you know, go off and look, see is there something on, and we go off to a rally, and I kind of got interested that way, you know, meeting, and it made friends, such great friends around the country, you know. I grew from there then, and just happy that our Sunday we go off to a vintage rally. It doesn't matter where it is, what part of the country it is, just go off and enjoy ourselves. There isn't a Sunday that we're not at a rally, and it's great to see everybody comes out, and so many charities benefit from these. We have to think about all the exhibitors. They come from all parts of the country here, north, south, east and west, and just they enjoy it as well. It's a great hobby for them, but it's spectacular then to see how much money is raised for charity. And we'll have a big showcase at the National Ploughing Championships as well, and you know, you see all the work and exhibits, and you see when all the kids come on and their grandparents are talking about that they had this item or they worked this when they were younger, and they explain all the history, and all the exhibitors then will you know, show them all the bits and pieces there is about their exhibit, and that's nice to see.
Actually, today of all days, the August Bank Holiday weekend, my father used to always take us down to Stradbally, down to the steam rallies. So back then, 15 years ago or that way, I bought the first old tractor, I said, and done it up, and it's a kind of an addiction. Once you get in, one thing leads to another, and before you know where you are, you're hooked.
And you said you bought the first tractor about 15 years ago. What was that?
Forts and Madeleine.
Okay, and did you have to spend long working on it?
I put a good bit into it, but the interesting thing about it was it was bought new at home. My father bought it new back in 1946. It was an interesting project, and the fact that I got it back was, you know, that's kind of what started me into it. But it's gone over 20 years, and I got it back, yeah.
And have you still got it?
Yeah, oh, I have, yeah. Oh, I have, yeah. It won't go again. The Ornery Sunday Rally is run by local clubs, whereas the national rally would be the IVETA national rally, and that's given to a club, some club up or down the country, to run it. And it helps the rally along because a lot more exhibitors generally come out to the national rally, and kind of once they come to a place for 1 year, they generally come back year after year, then again. It helps to build up the smaller rallies, you know. Now, we do like to move around the country. Like, if we're here in Limerick now this year, hopefully we'd like maybe to get up to Mayo or maybe over to Westmeath or somewhere like that next year, you know. It's going to be different sides of the country. Seamus!
Seamus! Seamus! Seamus!
I'm Seamus O'Grady, I'm the chairman of the local club here, the Irish Rovers. Vintage and classic car club. I mean, 12 months ago we wouldn't even thought we'd have the National Rally, so it's a huge thing. We got the weather, thank God, and everything's going nice and sweet, you know, and it's early in the day yet, so we're delighted with the entry we have here. Well, we just, I suppose, in earnest last April we started planning. We had an event last April and this kicked in immediately after it. Got our committees together and everyone got their jobs and they're working away. Everyone seems to be working well together. It's going very, very well for us.
Yeah, and I suppose how weather dependent is an event like this?
Oh, it's 100%. If it rains, you lose, that's it.
Yeah.
So, as I say, man makes plans and God laughs at us.
In Mount Bellew, County Galway, the weather could be an issue. But that hasn't stopped a large group from the Ford Cortina enthusiasts of Ireland gathering.
Sugar!
No sugar, thanks, not.
Tea is offered out to its members, huddled under a small canopy, protecting them from a downpour.
This can't be here now for anyone to.
Jerry Shalvey is the chairman of this group, which was founded just over 2 years ago. However, he's been involved in Cortina clubs for a number of years and is the best placed person to give an overview of the different models of the car.
This particular Cortina here is the very, very first of the models. Now, I can't say that this one is actually, they ran this model, which they called, it's just a Mark 1 Cortina. It was actually badged as a console. That was the introduction of them from 1962, and in at an early stage in 1963, that particular badge with console on it was dropped from it. And what they done then was they actually put Cortina in it. This Cortina here, this is the Mark II Cortina, which was introduced in October 1966, when they discontinued from 62 to 66 the Mark I Cortina as we've passed.
On display, steam and
showing working. This car here, I can see Robbie in the car next to it looking out saying, how come you're not mentioning his car? That's a Series 2, Robbie's is a Series 2. They had a nice timber inside in them. They actually look very, very well, as you can see there with Robbie's. The timber and finishing on it. Sorry Robbie, I'll open, taking liberty to open it there. You can see here in the finish that's in that car. The dash, the salubrious kind of a finish, which was very away of its head at the time. Like, it gives you that little bit of, how would I say, home creature comforts by the fact that it had timber attached to it. Because you were getting away from timbers, like the cars in the 50s and maybe the 40s might have had bits of timber, but this car was put on the market to hit the young executive, and that's why it got the badge in a 1600E on it. The E stood for executive in it.
And have you had this car long yourself, Robbie?
I have it for 9 years now. I had to spend a fortune on it, but it's good. It's working well now. I had one the same colour as this, 1972. It was only 2 years old when I bought it, and it was robbed and stolen. I never seen it, so eventually I got another one like it.
After the Mark II, we got the Mark III, which was referred to because it had transatlantic kind of innuendos about it by the fact that because a bit of the Detroit American finish come on this. It seemed to have a bit of an influence of American about it.
You can see it by kind of like the back.
Back of it. Yeah. And they called it the Coke bottle shape. Now, what that referred to was the siding of it, with the shapes, with the different flows that's on it. I know you can't get a real good look at it here. We came along then to what was the Mark IV. Now, I have the Mark IV here on this line just at the moment to show you, but we can go to the next thing that's not unlike it, which is basically the Mark V.
Jerry is an absolute mine of information when it comes to the Cortina. He knows the quirks of different models and what colours were most closely associated with different years. I'm interested in finding out how his love affair with the car started.
I can remember when the Mark III Cortina was actually launched. And I remember a neighbour of mine getting one of these cars at the time. And it was the 1600 XL Cortina. Now, I would say it was 3 years into its production. When I say I remembered it being launched, I do remember it being launched in 1971. But the facelifted model was an absolute desirable car to look at, because it was very modern looking for its time. And I remember looking at this car and we going being brought places with this man in this car. And that sticks in my mind. So I'm sure to an extent that's what probably sowed the seeds and captivated the imagination for me with Cortinas. I would have had a dream of another neighbour having a 1600E Cortina. The 1600E Cortina, which was a Mark II body style, really and absolutely stood out. And I said, this is super. I'm going to have one of these when I grow up. I didn't think that at 9 year old, no different than a fashion of let it be clothing, these things were going to be gone. And by the time I had grown up that I was fit to be driving them, we were actually in a Mark IV Cortina. But anybody I have spoken to that's involved in these Fords, they will tell you, yes, I remember these. This was the one I wanted. And this, you know, and that's the way it has come. I own the Cortina that I have. I bought it, I'll be quite honest, I'll be giving me age away. I bought it 33 years ago. And at the time of me buying it, I would have been 23. And I brought this car home, and I'll never forget, Lord me good, my mother, she only passed away last year, but I'll never forget her words. She said to me, much did you pay for that? I said, I paid £50 for it. She turned and she said to me, £50? Now, I couldn't tell her the truth. I gave £350 for it. She said it was enough for it and it not going. Now, that same car today, as for what it is, because it's a Lotus Cortina, it's actually worth in and around. But you see, there's no point in saying what it's going to be worth, because I'm not going to sell it, because I like it that much. It's part of my life now. It's worth about 25,000 sterling. But we'd say you take your average run-of-the-mill Cortinas. Like, I remember them being sold for maybe, you'd hear stories where they were traded in. Now, when I grew up, like we'd say, in the 70s as a teenager, and I seen them cars actually being sold for as little as £50 at the time. And people drove them. Now, how so many of these have survived, it's unbelievable. And it's through the sheer enthusiasm of people that these vehicles have actually been brought back into this condition. Now, depending on every man's pocket and his finances, he'll tweak it to what he feels he could remember one looking like. And this was his car, we'll say, of his youth. And this is what he wants to get. So it's keeping that imaginative dream still there. But let's say he's doing it in a midlife, when you could call it a midlife crisis maybe.
Jerry introduces other members of the Ford Cortina enthusiasts, including Paddy Farrell, who is standing beside his car when I meet him.
Yeah, she's a 1983 Cortina Crusader. She's in mint condition, nothing to be done to it. I bought it up in Fermanagh a couple of years ago, and that car has been all over Ireland since. I've been at the show in Wales, which is well in Llandudno. I brought it there May weekend, and the Cortina Club was over there in at that show. I think we had 22 Cortinas or something in that region. But I got my first Cortina back when the Cortina enthusiasts started. I was up in Cullen in Louth one day, and I have two friends up there, Martin Weldon and Mick O'Toole. And Martin had a Mark V Cortina in the shed, and strange things has happened. I came home with it. So that's how the whole thing started, you know. But it's great to be a part of a very active club. We're heading for Charleville now, the first week in September, for a weekend away as well. I came up here now yesterday. And I stopped overnight here and I'm staying tonight and going home now again tomorrow, you know, which is 135 miles, I don't mind that. It's well able for us. Since last March, I've been out every Sunday anyway at shows, whether it's a Cartina show or no matter what sort of a show it is, I'm out all the time. Oh, I travel to Cork, Dublin, up to Mosny. I go nearly all over Ireland, you know, when there's a show on. And especially a big show like this here today. Everybody knows one another and they're out there wet and fine. And as you see today, the weather is so bad and we have a large number of Cartinas here at the show as well. I have a few more cars at home as well and I take them out on different occasions.
It's not all about vehicles with engines for vintage fans. Durrow County Laois is a hive of activity for lovers of the High Nelly bicycle. At Bob's Bar, the man responsible for this local craze, Bobby Campion, has installed his own High Nelly museum.
They say there was a bike, a High Nelly, for every letter of the alphabet. But like High Nelly itself is a gas term, because there is no such bike as a High Nelly. There is now, because Marty Mangan has a patent and that. Well, before Marty done that, it was a nickname for a girl's bike with a hoop bar, which was called a Rally Popular. And just someone thought up with a bright idea of calling it a High Nelly. Now every black bike that was built from early 1900s comes under High Nelly. Well, I'm collecting High Nellies for 30 years. The first one came from a neighbour's there. I seen it up on the top of a trailer going to the dump. And I said to him, where's he going? He says, I'm going to Ireland for it. He says, to well load it for the dump. And I says, God, he says, you're not going with that anyway. I climbed up on top and I cut the rope and I took it down off it, and that was my first High Nelly. It was a man's 3-speed High Nelly, and it's actually one of the nicest bikes I have in the museum. Well, bikes was particular attraction, but anything old, I like anything that's old. But thanks be to God, that was in the 70s, the late 70s. And since then, I'm after seeing thousands of High Nellies after being brought out of ditches and out of sheds that would be otherwise dumped, and a lot of them were, but hopefully we can say here that there's actually hundreds of High Nellies floating around the Midlands here now.
So this is the way up to your museum?
Yeah. So that's the idea over there.
So behind every bike here, there's a photograph and a story. And so did it take you long to start actually get this room the way you want?
Ah, sure. Trying to do all the frames. I have a man that takes the picture. I have all the pictures the same. They're 6x8, black and white. That relates to that bike and that one there and down along, you know. So I'd love to have a big room to put every High Nelly into, but unfortunately, I mean, that was the one, I said, that was going to the dump in Urlingford. But that's for a bike going to the dump in Urlingford.
So this is the bike is that the bike, started off the
collection.
The obsession, maybe?
The obsession is right, rather than the collection, says you. The madness. Okay. And that reminded me of my own first bike that I ever got. It was a just basic. 3 wheels, a chain, and pedals.
Is this the only High Nelly museum in the world?
You could say in the world. Well, as far as I'm concerned, that specialise in High Nellies. They know lads have penny fardens and they have all sorts of stuff. But this is just a local High Nelly museum. That's a real old bike. Because when I brought that over to Tim Spallin, he's able to date from, but there's a number on every bike, you know. The number and determined what age the bike was. That was very, very early 1900s.
And do people come up and visit this room?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, because I have a signpost upstairs. Drop upstairs and see our bike museum. That's Eugene Begley's bike. He was here from 65 to 68. And that was his bike there, and that's part of his uniform there. He married my sister, so he got the sister and we got the bike. See, we get new additions. There's a miniature High Nelly. I bought it off a girl the other day, and her mother bought it for her in 1968 in Bill Dyle's shop in Durrow. And the Bill Dyle's billhead is drapery and light hardware. And he sold that bike to her, and she bought it when she was going to school in 1969. But that would take me 4 months. Can't rush anything. You have to just take your time and do it right. And her mother is still alive, hale and hearty. So I have a photograph of her mother and herself, and I'll write down then where she bought her bike. And but that's the little space left for that there. Catherine Stapleton is her name. The likes of John Quinn there. Do you know, John's family come up here and they know that bike was in their shop delivering around Abbey Leaks. And it's a great sense of, you know, it's not thrown into the shed, gathering dust, people come up. There's not one day goes by that they wouldn't summon people visit the museum, because it just automatically, with lads, it brings them back to cycling to the matches in Thurles or Crow Park or Kilkenny. And that's what they did. That was their only form of transport. Young lads, even yourself, you don't realise that they were walking up to this, and suddenly you got this bike and this opened up a whole new world out there. You were going to dances in Templemoor or dances in Kilkenny, hopping up on your bike. It was part and parcel of life, and the roads weren't as good as they are now. But these bikes will never be seen again. The factory burnt down in 79, and that was it. The bigger picture that it did, that they didn't make more. But what they're making now, the stuff is just not in them. It's Tubular, that's pure steel.
Durrow native Hugh Shepherd can recall cycling High Nellies 50 years ago.
I cycled to school from Durrow to Rathdowney every day to the vocational school it was at that time, it's now St. Fergal's College. And I cycled on a High Nelly bike, 20-mile round trip, every day for 3 years, I think it was. You know, there was supposed maybe 10 people, young lads from Durrow at that time. You know, sir, I don't know where that High Nelly went to. And, you know, my father was a postman. So he cycled 22 miles every day. You know, the regret was when this High Nelly Club started up that his bicycle couldn't be found either, you know. So people just, you know, dumped him, I suppose, you know, and more modern bikes came in, you know. So it's a pity. But anyway, there are still hundreds of them around the country, you know. It was 2008, we had a series of events right over the year in to celebrate the 300th anniversary of the design and layout of Durrow by William Flower, who was Lord Ashbrook. One of the events I came up with was a High Nelly heritage rally around Durrow. And we did about maybe 10 miles journey around Durrow. People started to get interested in High Nelly bikes, and they looked in their barns and their sheds, and they started pulling them out and repairing them and see where they could repair them. And that's kind of started it then, and then Bob started up a High Nelly Club. It has gone from strength to strength, really, you know. The idea has spread all over Ireland now at this stage. There's many, many High Nelly Clubs around Ireland, which is great.
Julie Fitzpatrick and Barry Foley are two more people with personal and family connections to the High Nelly.
I never had a modern bike at home. My dad used to collect the High Nellies for years for old films and that. And my bike was always a High Nelly, and it's written down at home and all where my High Nelly came from. We have a book at home where any of the High Nellies that he got and acquired over the years, where they all came from. There's a history of kind of each bike. And I always had the High Nelly, and like everyone else kind of had a BMX or, you know, a good racer or whatever, but mine was always the High Nelly. I used to go picking strawberries, and it was the High Nelly I used to bring every morning. It was probably about 40 or 50 at home.
My involvement in the High Nelly Club started living in the area, and Bob's Bar being my local, and Bob having a passion that runs a long time in High Nellies. My granny's bike ended up in the museum, and then different activities we started. One evening a meeting was called, and I think 43 people turned up at the first meeting with an idea of starting a club, and by the end of the meeting, a club was actually formed. We meet on Wednesdays and Sundays. We cycle out to local charities, and if there's a local vintage rally on somewhere, we get together and cycle. It's brilliant because everyone is just on a bicycle. There's no pace. Everyone's cycling two by two, chatting away. It's very much a social event. It's better than taking any tablet.
The best day, I'd say, we ever had from anyone that was in the club was St. Patrick's Day in Dublin. We were invited up by the Dublin Cycling Club, and we went up and they looked after us, and there were 42 of us go up, 52 of us, sorry, on a bus with our high nillies. We had our set dancers intermingled along with us because they drive, and we danced and rode the whole way down O'Connor Street into 500,000 people. It was absolutely unbelievable. The club is still talking about it. Well, like, everyone wanted to shake hands with you, you know, and everyone wanted to dance at their particular spot, like, you know.
And your friends are texting you, "I just saw you on the telly. Is that you on the telly, Barry, at the front with all the high nellies?" That must have been the highlight, was walking the same and cycling the St. Patrick's Day parade in Dublin. That was absolutely magic.
It's a grand evening for a spin anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Another of the Durrow members is Henry Martin, who has an extensive collection of high nellies himself.
I'm 78 years of age, and we rode the bike, the high nellies, to school. I was cycling. I always had a high nelly, but we used to be cycling and not a little bit. And had an old racer one time, and every time you get down off it, you go back to it, it'd be punctured. So I went back to the high nelly then, and we're riding it nearly all my lifetime, yeah. At the present time, I have about 17 high nellies between the family, herself and a daughter, and a son rides a high nelly, and sometimes the grandchildren come up from where they are living and they'd ride them. Here with the club, you know. The son-in-law was up in Cavan and had friends up there, and he said, "Have a few high nellies for me when I go up to come home." So when he went up, this friend of his had 12 of them, got her up in County Cavan. So he kept 6 good ones and then gave me the 6 old ones. There was no wheels upon some of them, and this man in Limerick, you could buy the wheels off him, or the local man in Port Leash. People have come up to you and say, "I had a high nelly 50 years ago. I delivered a post on it, and I delivered papers in the morning."
This is your collection of ladies' high nellies?
This is ladies' high nellies, yeah. And some men gave them to me as well because they were belonging to ladies, you know. You know, people just passing the road, come down for the Scarecrow Festival, and they see, "I had my mother's bike and I was always looking somewhere where I'd like to put it." And she's a blank stranger, that lady. She's from County Galway. And she remembers her mother going and bringing home messages and that. And she just said, "What finer place to have it." And that was a donation now. And I went off and got that done up. But each bike had cost me maybe €250 to get done up, no matter what sort of its condition. A tricycle up there, a woman was the same age as myself, and she remembers riding that when she was 3 and 4 years of age with her doll in the back. You know, that she'd run on top.
Yeah.
Blue one. They're going to be here long after I'm dead and gone, and someone will get, you'll see school tours here looking at bikes because they'll be gone so rare. You know, and the whole museum. That's my thing, to just keep something of the past for the young ones that's coming up, the young lads that's coming up.
How many high nellies have you now yourself?
Well, if someone asked me that question, I'd say, well out of earshot of Marion, you know, but I'd have anything up to 80. And they're from all walks of life. All people donate them, I buy them, I go to auctions. Or if I see a nice one that catches me, something different, I like different makes. I'd like to have a Robin Hood, and I'd like to have a Pierce, you know, and I'd like to have a Royal Enfield. And, you know, you just have the different names, because rally, you know, it's all rally, but when you see a different name, you know, you see the small BSAs and a man's BSA, and you see something, Hercules, Hamilton, you know, all different names that come at you and say, I might get one of them, a Rudge. You know, so We have made every make and shape, and then lads would ring you up and they said, I have something, would I be interested in it? And sometimes they am, and sometimes I've no place for it. And I'm running out of space, big time now, so.
And how do you get away with that?
Hide them. Simple. They're never in the one place at any one given time.
Yeah.
You're listening to Turning Back the Wheels on News Talk 106 to 108.
Whether it's High Nellies, tractors or cars, there are people who are real collectors and completists, like Oliver Kelly from Athlone. He's got one Cortina for each of the five different marks.
About 15 years ago, I bought my first Cortina, which was a Mark 1 Cortina. It was a Mark 1 GT Cortina. Back in 1970, the first car I bought, well, one of the first cars I bought was a Cortina. And I owned that Cortina then for... Oh, I must have owned it for 3 or 4 years, you know. And I owned a few Cortinas then, and then I kind of went away from them, still having a terrible or a great interest in them. Went away from them and went to different kind of family type, more family type cars, estate cars and that, because we were married and we had a couple of kids and, you know, you wanted estate cars for that. But I always said to the wife, I says, whenever the time comes and we're able to get back into Cortinas again, I'll be back into Cortinas. Kind of round about the year 2000, I'd say, I actually stumbled across a Cortina at a show, my Mark 1 Cortina GT, and I bought that one. And then I added to them then. Of course, when you buy one, you say, oh, Ginny, you know, I wouldn't mind a second one. And you end up then with five of them, like, you know. I wouldn't have them except they were right, like, do you know. And they're pretty time-consuming now. They're typical old cars. You have to be the whole time doing a bit of maintenance with them, like. Can be going grand today and you bring them home and take them out the next day and maybe they're spluttering or they're not going that well and a bit of dirt has got up in a carburetor or something like that. But then you have to kind of keep them. It takes a bit of polishing, and you know, you have to polish them and clean them up and keep them clean underneath. And that now, when that goes home this evening, that'll have to be all washed off and washed down underneath and that be, and put back in, do you know? And then it depends, if it's not out again for another month, it'll be all dust from within in the garage. It'll have to get the same treatment again when it's taken out, you know.
And do you get to drive them much?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, this time of the year now, you would be driving them probably every, well, you could average every second Sunday, you know. And then maybe at home in an evening, if you got a nice fine evening, it'd be just nice to take out one and go for a drive. There's something different about them than driving the ordinary car, you know. Well, I suppose it brings you back to your youth and that sort of stuff.
Currently, I have two Ferguson 20s. One is under restoration, and another one is going to take an awful lot of restoration. The engine is good in the other one now, and the one I'm doing at the moment, the engine is bad in it, so she's getting the full overhaul. My brother then, he has a Ferguson, or a Massey Ferguson 35 four-cylinder. I have a Dixit in, and we're very fond of the Universal tractors ourselves at home, because we have had one since 1976, first tractor my father ever bought. And I collected a few of them there in the last couple of years because they're being exported back to Romania and they were going to be completely gone in Ireland shortly. So most of them, they're all running, but they just need to be restored, tidied up and restored. So basically then we have horse machinery at home, finger bar mowers, hay turners, hay swarters. Currently have ran out of shed space, currently. A lot of stuff is covered outside, but no, look, it's grand, it's nice to have it. You know, some of the machinery now that I have at home was used years ago between two farms, between our own and my granduncle's farm.
Anywhere we'd see an old machine, we'd pick it up and bring it back to the shed, clean it down, repair it and paint it back up and bring it out on show every Sunday, all over the country.
And for how long have you been doing that?
We've been doing it now for about, 8 years or thereabouts. Semi-retired now, so I spend a couple of hours every day nearly painting and cleaning and getting them around, you know.
And is it an expensive hobby?
Not really. That type of machinery, no. Tractors can be a bit. Motor cars are very expensive, like, but that kind of machinery, really not, because all you can do is clean them down and repair something if it's broken or replace, you know, you can't replace anything, you've got to make it yourself. It's about 150 machines at home in sheds.
150 machines?
Of all descriptions, horse machinery, of every description you can ever think of. Tractors as well, but it's mainly horse. We have some very old tractors, but 1929 John Deere, that's our oldest. It is on spade lugs, so it won't get punctured. We have it at most of the rallies and shows every Sunday, you know. And you go out and you chat and you meet fellas, and then you meet new ones. And as well as that, you meet what I always looking for, some fellow with a machine that I don't have. And once I meet him, I'm off again. But to me, this is a disease, and you can't get rid of it. There's no tablets for it. No one will treat you. Just enjoy it and have a good time.
A four-cylinder Porsche diesel, if we can get it.
And are they hard to track down?
Yeah, hard, yeah.
Almost impossible.
Impossible. There were only about 180 of them made, I think.
Okay.
When we hear the name Porsche, we generally tend to think of the fast German sports cars. However, for Limerick man Dan Ryan, he's more interested in their tractors. He has 14 tractors at the rally in Doon, most of them Porsche, and there's still an elusive one or two missing from his collection, as he explains with his friend Pat O'Toole.
He bought the two-cylinder Porsche down in North Kerry. It came in nuts and bolts, in bits and pieces, in the back end of a dirty hatchet. We didn't even know if we had it all or not. It just filled the trails like a load of scrap. And it's over there now shining. Well, you see, when you get it in that condition, you have to start putting it together before you start restoring it. Because you need to find out if you have all the bits or what bit that you don't have. And if you have all the bits, you're in luck. And if you're not, then you have to go looking for the bits that are missing.
That's about five, I think, lads with Porsche tractors. But any of them that hasn't been has more than one.
Yeah.
It is an addiction and a bad one. Yeah. We give all this and we run off and give all this off and order.
It's by doing that you learn about another part somewhere else or a tractor somewhere else. And, oh, I know where someone has an old yoke in the corner. I think it's like that. I mean, look around you. There's all, in all shapes and conditions here. Some leave them in the original patina, like that little Dexter over. There's another one further down, it's pretty clean, you know. There's the one at the end almost new. Some people restore them completely back. Some make them mechanically perfect, brakes perfect, steering perfect, and leave them as they found them.
Vintage fairs are not all about tractors and classic cars. Different types of farm machinery, steam engines, and the Heinellis have also become regular fixtures. However, one of the more impressive exhibits at the All-Ireland Rally comes from Eddie Spencer, who is driving a rare vintage truck from the US.
She's a Mech, a B-Vital Mech, 1957. She's American truck, left-hand drive. Rare enough in Ireland now, maybe one or two, maybe might be a second one, but they're scarce enough here in Ireland. We have another two lorries at home, Ford, and we have an Atkinson, and we have about seven or eight tractors as well. I kind of big into the American things because with the tractors, I have two or three American tractors, and I kind of like the American stuff. It's good, robust, good. The stuff is in them, like, you know, and my friend Paddy, beside this one here, is another Mech, but I kind of like the older model, like, you know. The next one back from her will be chain driven, but she's a double drive. I kind of like this big broggy stuff, like, you know. So a man originally came from Cappamore, Dennis Meehan is his name. He went to America 30 years ago and he started up his own business, and Paddy knew him there and got in touch with him, and we went from there. Then he had a good few lorries for sale, and I picked on this one from the time I bought it, say in October, say 10 years ago, October, and ahead of Christmas week. So between shipping and getting room on the boat and stuff, and it took about 3 weeks for sailing, but she got here, and when I got her now, she wouldn't be in the condition she's in. There's a lot of things that wouldn't pass here, say safety-wise, and different laws in America, like, you know, what would be here, but there would have been no indicators. Well, there was indicators, but it wouldn't be the European standard of what we have here now. There's no mud guards in it. You know, they'd be travelling different roads than what we would be here. That was already done. The fifth wheel coupling was slightly different. Now it's the same size pin, people would understand, but oh, if you saw it now, you often wonder how to pull a trailer. But over there, it done its job, but here it wouldn't pass. Bits and pieces, but had to be repainted and brought up to the way I have it now today, like, you know.
It's shining, it's red and it's shining.
It is, yeah.
Do you have to spend a lot of time just making sure it's clean and it's actually gleaming at the moment?
Yeah, well, we have it, as I said, in, have it 10 years. She's been freshly sprayed the air up. She only came out with the shed there on Wednesday, last week on. So this is our first show out in the last 12 months, like, you know, so just to get going. So we're hitting England with her there now, and this day month we'll be down in Dorset Steam Fair.
And do you find that many people come up to you at these shows asking about it?
They do, be all right, yeah. She's a little bit different. She's a 15-speed box. That's on her, a triplex box, they call them, you know. So that's her standard colour, all max. In this year, would come this year up to 66, 67 or thereabouts. That's our colour green inside. We'll try and do our best to try and keep it as original as we can, or colour wise if we can, but then again, every time you can do that, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't do it every time, like, you know. But yeah, there's no power steering on her. That's why you have the big wheel for twisting and turning there, but which is not too bad when you're driving. Like.
Have we all small dogs in our arena by now? Because we don't want to miss out.
While vintage enthusiasts spend countless hours trying to get parts and make their vehicles better, the people I've met in these different groups tend to come together for the enjoyment and the social aspect of it.
It's all about meeting people and friends and making friends with people and that sort of stuff, do you know? They're all a fierce, nice bunch of guys that's in it, like, and very obliging. And if one of us stuck for a bit, you ring up another guy and he'll have it and he'll help you out, and you'll be chopping and changing and switching and that sort of stuff, do you know? Yeah, it's a very family-orientated type of club. The men all get together and they chat about the cars, and the women all get together and I don't know what they do chat about. They're all about us wasting time and wasting money on those cars, you know. No doubt about it, it's a great club. It's a great club, and it's a, you know, a great old camaraderie in it. And, you know, everyone is... Look at where you have a bunch of lads and they all thinking the same way. You'd ring one another at night, you know, you'd be in contact with lads up and down about this, that and other. A car for sale here, a car for sale there. Or you'd nearly know where every car was, who had it, or when it'd be changing hands and that sort of stuff.
I would say that our youngest members could be early 30s. To our oldest members, maybe being in 70s. And the bulk of us then, the rest of us, is in early to mid 50s. So I would take it, I'd be hoping that the interest would always remain kind of the same. When I come to the event, I just say, you know, weather mightn't permit it, like as we see today, it's not a great day, but the spirit is there. And when the spirit is there, you get speaking to somebody and you say, that day was worthwhile. Even though it may be mucky and wet and you have to go home and you have to go through the cleaning process and everything, you want to display what you have there at its finest. Oh, there's minding on them, there is no doubt about that. And like, any man that has one, or woman for that matter, that's actually involved in vintage will tell you, well, if she's not involved with it directly, she'll be involved with it where she'll have a husband or a partner that's outside in the garage forgetting to come in at night. And that's about the best way I can describe it, Ciarán. She probably will agree with that, I'd say, if she hears this. But anyway, she'll be saying the second love of his life is a car.
You just get to know everybody so well, like, you know, it's like a little family, really. Everybody meets up, and when somebody gets something new, everyone comes on and, well, admires it and, you know, check it out, really, and to see, well, what it's like and congratulate you. And, you know, it's just, that's the way the vintage is.
What it was initially started out was fun. Like, it's not about the distance you take or how long you're out. It's just you're riding along the bike. You're taking in everything. You're not looking down like the racing bikes on the white line, going such a place in 3 hours, 45 seconds. You know, We just go out, we don't know when we're going to stop, when we're going to come back. It's just leisurely. Like, it's healthy exercise. It's, you're doing something you love.
You know, I think it's the camaraderie and the easygoing nature of Hainelli clubs and cycling, Hainelli bicycles, you know. There's a great social aspect to it. I think that's the big thing, you know. We're not trying to get from A to B in the fastest time possible, you know. It's about doing short cycles, I suppose, in the main, and going back and having a pint and a bit of a laugh, and, you know, that's what life is all about.
On average, and I know it's hard to kind of quantify these things, how many hours a week would you reckon you're spending on the administration side of Vintage and the actual the restoration and maintenance?
A lot more than we care to think about.
Yeah.
Oh, it feels time consuming, yeah. It's very time consuming, yeah.
But we'd miss it. We would honestly miss it. It's become a part of our lives now, you know. And it's hard to explain it to somebody that wouldn't be involved in the Vintage, you know. It's just a case of, if you're not doing something, you're on the phone to someone checking out something, or there's some show on and they want to help with something, or, you know. I don't think we'll ever go away from the Vintage. It would have to be something very serious to take us away from it anyway. You're just mad to keep collecting all the time.
Turning Back the Wheels was produced by Ciarán Ryan and was supported by a grant from the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland as part of the Sound and Vision Scheme. To listen back to this or any other News Talk documentary, go to newstalk.com/documentary on News Talk.